Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook, and at highlandradio.com.
Okay, thanks to Louise for joining us before the news at 10 o'clock. Others texting in, following on from our conversation with both Louise and Des. Good morning, Greg. I've been listening to Des talking about ME, and it was like talking about myself. I was diagnosed with ME chronic fatigue and was running around in circles for years with declining health. I was diagnosed with Lyme disease in 2019, and I'm now on the road to recovery. If you want to give that guy my number, I'd be more than happy to talk to him. Thanks. Hi, Gregory, ME. This man needs to be referred to a specialist immediately. Another, Greg, tell Des there is hope. I'm living proof of that. I've been down that same road for almost 10 years. The HSE will never be able to help Des. I went private to a doctor in Galway as a last resort. I borrowed the money to see this specialist doctor. Does Des live in Letterkenny? Because I can help with much information about myalgia and it's ME. I don't want to, it's NC. Phalaenomatosis, isn't it? I had an article about my case in the Democrat in 2011. I was as bad as Des and even worse. And you know about my road safety campaign for 15 years up until COVID stopped me. Tell Des to not lose hope. He can get well again. Hi, Greg. Des, with the fatigue problems, would benefit greatly by going to see a good accredited psychotherapist. What the mind cannot hold shows up in the body, and if he worked through some of the emotional baggage by going once a week to a psychotherapist, it would be of great support. That comes in from Tom in Dublin. Thank you very much for all of your comments in relation to that. Very good. Very proud of Amber. Not only a great player, but such a lovely speaker as well. Great ambassador for our young people, doing herself, Donegal and Ireland proud. Good luck, everyone in the Irish team and management. Yes, indeed. As she speaks, she's very impressive. There's just no doubt about that. The EU pushing ahead with a digital currency is part of the World Economic Forum plan that's been progressing for years. Shaping the future of the fourth industrial revolution and COVID-19, the Great Reset, and so on and so forth. The concerning part is that the electronic currency will be programmable. This has been objected to by the Bank of England, as it also allows governments to control what the user is allowed to spend the currency on. So, for example, this is what they believe could be worst case scenario. If the EU decides that people can only buy 50 euro of diesel, then once you reach that limit, your card or device will not allow you to buy more. This move away from cash is about control, not convenience, of cost effectiveness. Best of luck in Australia, Amber, from the Dunfanaghy Youth Girls Soccer. I'm sorry I'm mixing these up a little bit. And I've just got a couple on the RTE scandal. The government must be loving the RTE pay scandal, dominating all the news headlines. Should be focusing on bigger issues. Defective blocks, housing, health, refugees living on the streets of Ireland. This is just a distraction. Well, it's more than just a distraction because it goes to the root of government, public-funded bodies. And as I said on the show yesterday, all of these things are intertwined. This is about public-funded service. This time it's media, public-funded service housing, public funding service HSE. It's all kind of the same. And unless we start getting accountability in any of these areas, all the problems will continue to persist. I agree with what you're saying. We're covering it. We're talking about it, but we're talking about everything else as well. I watched the Oireachtas Inquiry yesterday, says a listener, and was wondering why it was being chaired by Reese Witherspoon, who was in Legally Bond. On a serious note, I think the future of the Late Late Show is in jeopardy right now. Sponsors will be slow to jump on board RTE's Titanic. I don't think it is even that. It's just, I thought that was a toxic chair to begin with, and just with everything that's going on, it seems Stephen's even more so. Right, okay. There's a competition running at the moment that I want to give a mention to. Let me see. Yeah, here it is. It's competition time on our social medias. We're giving away one lucky winner the chance to win an amazing prize with Wild Atlantic Camp in Chrysler. To celebrate the launch of the new two-story luxury chalet, we've teamed up with our friends at the Wild Atlantic Camp to give one lucky winner a 500 euro voucher to spend at the camp. If you have all you have to do is head over to Highland Radio's Instagram, that's Highland Radio Donegal, and follow the instructions there, and you could be the lucky winner of a 500 euro voucher for the Wild Atlantic Camp in Chrysler. The win will be announced on Friday the 13th of June on and around the Northwest, with John Bresson live from the Wild Atlantic Camp in Chrysler. Ooh, excellent. Fair play to John. I wonder, will he get a free stay? Why don't I get free anything? Am I not an influencer? I'll go and I'll post all about it on social media. I'm joking. But get on to social media. They've got their new two-story luxury chalets there. It's at the Wild Atlantic Camp in Chrysler. Get on to our social media for your chance to win. It's kind of exclusive to that space. A caller says, I believe ME is as a result of repetitive stress on the body. He needs to reprogram his health with a focus on his mental health fatigue. But listen, I think a lot of people try and attribute it to mental health. I don't think it's your mental health and then you get ME. I think what happens is people get ME. They get very frustrated, obviously, because it's life-altering. And then they end up with obvious mental health issues in some cases because of frustration and what have you. Hi, Greg. We were listening to Des. My husband had Lyme disease, which was not picked up in the hospital. He spent over 10 weeks in hospital between Letterkenny and Sligo. If Des would like to give my husband a ring to discuss symptoms, we can pass on the number. There is only one consultant in Ireland treating Lyme disease, and Irish blood tests are only 30% accurate. So good chance it didn't show up in bloods. Des has all the symptoms my husband has, and I presume you're talking about Dr. Lambert, who's been a regular guest on this show, as has the issue of Lyme disease. That's coming in from Michelle and Peter. We will pass on that, those details, Michelle. As I said on the show yesterday, before these types of messages start coming through, I'd love if Des would also get that checked as well, because it also did sound very similar to symptoms that are associated with that disease also. But either way, need to get to the bottom of it, of course, for Des's quality of life. All right, so before 10 in the first hour, we had a good chat with Amber Barrett, who is representing, is named on the Irish squad, taking part in the Australian, the World Cup in Australia. Starts next month. We're all very excited. And I was saying during that piece how we are punching above our weight here in Donegal with our excellent sports people. And I mentioned Amber, of course, and I mentioned Jason Quigley, and I can throw Vicky Gill's name in there now. Vicky from Kilmacrenan is in studio with us, and I can say, without fear of contradiction, congratulations, Vicky, because you have around your neck the gold medal you won at the Special Olympics in basketball in Berlin. You're only just home. We said we'd get you back on.
Yeah.
I said it. I think I said at least a silver, and would get you. No, I didn't. come here. How was the experience? Congratulations. What was it like?
Thank you. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All that training, all the diet, all the exercise, all paid off in the end.
Yeah.
What was the experience like?
Experience was getting there and being on the team, and then meeting new people and meeting different ones. It was amazing.
How big was it? How many people were there? Was it like not numbers literally, but was it like loads and loads and loads?
7,000 was it?
Wow, okay.
7,000 athletes.
Wow, amazing. How many games did you have to play to win gold?
We had 7 to play.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
We won 2 matches and we lost 3.
Right, okay. Yeah. And Dad, were you able to go? Sorry, I've forgotten the first name.
I was able to go, yeah. Carol and myself went over for 4 days. We stayed just, the games were taking part in the Massey Centre, which covers roughly 40 acres.
Wow, so that's what I was trying to get a sense of the scale. This complex is huge, isn't it? Yeah.
But Vicky and them got to the opening ceremony, which was held in the old Olympic Stadium in Berlin.
What was that like, Vicky?
Fantastic, brilliant. It was amazing, good crowd, and everybody cheered us on, and the fireworks was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's all part of the experience as much as anything, isn't it? It was better than you thought it was going to be. All right, okay. And did you have to go around with the flag and all that kind of stuff as well, or what way does that work over there? Do you know, in the opening ceremony, are you brought out in front of the crowd, or?
We didn't have to do the flag, but somebody else done the flag, but we had to walk out in front of
everyone, and walk around. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, okay, brilliant. And what was it like in the games? Were you nervous? Were you able to enjoy it? Or
no, I wasn't nervous. I just got on and kept myself calm and done everything what the coaches told us to do, and that was it.
And you'll not forget this in a rush.
No.
Okay, brilliant stuff. What an experience.
Yeah.
And the whole family, the whole of I think Kilmacrenan didn't know you were doing this until you were on. It was kept all hush hush, and then it's like, what? Vicky's going to the Olympics. Yeah. What's going on here? So it all happened and turned around really quite quickly, didn't it? All right. And family's all very, very proud, of course, as I say, as is Kilmacrenan in the county.
Yes, was very proud. Very, very proud. Me and Carol was very proud, of course. Vicky's worked hard for 12 years.
A lot of sacrifices.
A lot of sacrifices. And a commitment. Lot of travel. She played for Ulster, you know, got to national championships, and then getting picked for the World Cup to play in the World Games was something we never expected, or Vicky never expected it either, you know. And when she got the call, we didn't get the call till late in January. That was one of the problems with COVID, as you know yourself. And when she got the call then, it was so exciting then. And we were trying, well, the reason we never mentioned it or kept it kind of covered, you know, she could have sustained injuries. She was still playing league football and or league
basketball, yeah.
So we were worried, you know, and so we just kept it a kind of hush hush until we spoke to you the first time. That was just a couple of
hey, we're all about the exclusives here in the Nine Till Noon show. Don't worry about that. 73 were on the Team Ireland, team athletes. We collected 24 golds, 22 silvers, 29 bronze. A really great haul, Vicky.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, brilliant stuff. What was the best part for you?
My best part was being there and seeing all the sights and just competing.
Brilliant. So you got to see a bit of the area too while you were over there.
Yeah, see Berlin walls and everything. And
brilliant. Yeah. Fantastic stuff. The flight's okay?
Flight was grand. Not a bother. Yeah. Everything was... I sleep in the way, so I'm sorry.
Hey, thankfully someone else. I sleep on the plane all the time. And then all of a sudden I realised someone told me that I snore.
Snore, yes.
So have I been snoring on the plane? I don't know. Hopefully in that sleeping position I don't. But anyway, and then you got back into the airport. Yeah. And what was it like having the whole country behind you and cheering you on?
It was shocking, like when we seen everybody there. But it was nice to see all the family. And
are you still tired? You only got back yesterday. Quite a bit of travelling, lots of excitement, nervous energy and adrenaline
still,
and all that.
I'm still tired, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. And what's next? Now, anything planned?
None yet.
You can chill for a bit.
Yeah.
Going on holidays now.
Going on holidays, exactly.
What, can we talk about that? Where are you going?
She's actually going on, you're going, tell them what you're
going to do. Mangan's tour.
Right.
Glasgow and Scotland, so.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Well, from Berlin to Donegal to Scotland, it's all go, go, go. Well, listen, Vicky, congratulations.
Thank
the medal looks wonderful
Thank
on you. And it's been it's great to get you back in. And everyone, of course, is really, really proud of you and the rest of your teammates, 73 in total. And you did the business and had lots of fun in the process too, which is what it's all about. And we're all incredibly proud, not least your family and your fellow Kilmacrennans. And the rest of us as well. So, Vicky, listen, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And we really appreciate you calling back in and enjoy the celebrations. All right, okay.
Thanks, Greg.
Anything that neither of you want to add? You happy enough? Yeah?
No, I'd just like to say that while we were in Berlin, Vicky, myself and her mum, the people in Berlin, the service was amazing. Free trains, free buses, just for family and athletes. Everywhere you wanted to go, tube, train, overland, bus, rail, didn't matter. It was all free to families.
Well, that's how you do it, isn't it?
It was fabulous. And the organisation within the Message Centre, as I said, which covers 40 acres, was absolutely fantastic. You had no problem. And the people were so good. If you asked a person a question, they would have went out of their way to show you where to go, you know.
Yeah,
that was
exactly.
The
and that's what it's all about,
that's
isn't it?
All
exactly.
Because you know,
what means is the city embraced the games.
The city embraced the games. Yeah. And the word inclusion, as they call it, Einheit, which was unity, as the German word for that, that really was involved.
We have a tendency here to use that word but not really follow through.
Exactly, but they really did, you know.
Okay.
A simple story, we were lost and we asked this guy in Sub 4 how to get from A to B. He came out of the Sub 4 shop, he took me and Carol up the street, he got us tickets for the bus, he got on the bus with us, he took us down to the tube station, he stood at the tube station and got on the tube with us because we had to transfer to another one. Just to show us how to do it, and then went the whole way back to his work.
Wow.
Now, if that hasn't been, you know, thoughtful and caring, what would you do?
What a wonderful, wonderful
Thanks,
experience.
Thank you very much,
Listen, well done. Congratulations
you.
To you, Vicky, and all your teammates and all of the contingency from Ireland that went. A brilliant result. 24 golds, 22 silvers, 29 bronze. Thanks so much for calling up. And enjoy your holiday.
Thank you.
Thank
all
you.
Right, take care. Back shortly. Now, a campaign to tackle the issue of gambling addiction on an all-Ireland basis by a couple, Peter and Sadie Keogh, is what we're going to be talking about now. And I'm delighted to welcome on to the programme Peter and Sadie. Good morning to you. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
Good morning.
Morning, Greg.
Nice to have both of you on the show. How are you keeping?
Not too bad, thank you. We're kept fairly busy with our campaign north, south, east and west on this island.
Okay. Now, the reason you decided to launch this campaign is because of the tragic loss of your son, Sadie. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and
the experience of that, that led to?
Well, it's something. It's something we will never recover from. Our life has changed forever. Ourselves and our sons just totally devastated. It was so sudden and unexpected. We had no idea the extent of his gambling. We knew he gambled a little bit on football or whatever, but we didn't realise the extent of the damage it was doing to him. And, of course, we had no idea that gambling can kill. We know that now because we belong to a group of parents and wives and husbands who have lost people from gambling suicide. And so we're very well aware of the dangers of it. And that is why Gambling with Lives that we're connected with has started this education program to try and educate young people. Because as from going back to find out where it started when he was at school, when he was waiting for a bus to the country and he went into a local gambling arcade. So, I mean, it starts when they're very young and it starts, I think it's a bit of fun, but I know that he would never have taken risks with anything and he would not have been aware of the fact that he could end up where he ended up.
Yeah, and the thing that I've had concerns about, because we would talk about problem gambling on this program reasonably regularly, is how early it does start now, because it's even now, there are families listening to us and their children are playing games on Xbox or PlayStation or on their phone, and already the gambling is starting. You're opening boxes to see what's in them. You're opening card packs to see what's on there. It's this sort of, shall I open it now? Shall I open it in an hour? It's this sort of risk and reward, and it already is sort of feeding into that. And then you look at how social media works, if they're on Facebook, or it's the constant delivery of something by pulling down or scrolling up. It sort of creates this reward for these types of actions. Now, I can't say it's not being done by accident or on purpose, but very early on, Pete, people are being conditioned, also Sadie, whoever wants to come in on that, people are being conditioned to gambling. So you can then, at that bus stop with the right sign, very easily get them in through the doors.
Yes, it's a natural progression, Greg. You know,
it's intentional.
Yeah, okay, Sadie.
And as Sadie says, it's totally intentional. It's very clever marketing and very clever reeling in of young potential sources of a lot of money for the revenue of the gambling companies. And they're completely cynical in their approach. They don't see human beings, they see sources of money. And, you know, some of the richest people in the UK are the owners of Bet365, whose fortune runs into billions shared across five or six members of the family. Mm-hmm. That in itself just says how, you know, how ill-balanced gambling is. The gambler never wins. He may have a short-term gain, but you can be sure that the gambling company will come out on top at the end.
Well, if you win with any consistently, you're banned. And I want to throw the lotto in there as well too, because I think that's not an awful lot of people talk about how many people spend much of their income on lotto tickets or on the lotto being sold a dream, and it's mainstream, it's okay, you know. But I also believe people with an addiction could find themselves very vulnerable to that as well. Pete, it's what you don't know as well too. You and Sadie both are learning an awful lot about what happened to your son after the fact. Is that the case?
Yeah, we didn't know anything about what he had been doing. He kept it totally hidden. It's actually very shame. I think he was ashamed of what he was doing. And there's a great stigma to gambling. And I've heard since of people who have been gambling and have taken their lives, and the family will say, oh, he was in debt. It was the debts. The debt is not the problem. The debt is not, it's gambling, what it does to your head and to your brain, and you just get to the stage where you see there's no way out, and it really is not about the debt. And the interesting fact is we've been campaigning since Lewis died, and we decided to go public because we were so shocked. And when I tried to find out about gambling addiction, believe me, the gambling industry was there trying to hook me in. I was getting offers and emails every day offering me anything from £5, £10 to one day £1,500 free, so-called free bets to hook me in. So they're there. I mean, if somebody's looking for help, they're there offering them free bets. If somebody leaves the gambling, they're offering them free bets to get them back in again. So the stigma attached to it, we've never had anyone in Northern Ireland or the Republic of Ireland who have contacted us and said, we have a problem with, we have lost a son, a mother, a father, a husband or whatever from gambling addiction. In all the times we've been campaigning, we get calls from recovering gamblers saying, thank you so much for making this, bringing this to the public awareness, because they're struggling to stay gamble free. But never, we have not had one other person on this island who has said, I've lost someone.
What does that, what stands out about that, Sadie? Is it the secrecy of it, the fact that people, not everyone wants to necessarily go into the public eye on issues like this, but that being said, contacting you would not necessarily be public. So you know it's happening, so why are people not talking about it, do you think, Sadie?
I think it's a stigma of it, simply. And especially, I don't know, maybe it's not as bad in the Republic of Ireland, but I know in Northern Ireland it's very, very closed. Very, everybody's very closed. They don't want to talk about it.
Yeah,
and that's just.
So, how do we roll back from where we're at, though? Because the reality is that, and it's young people that are targeted from a very young age. Listen, that's why. That just so everybody is aware, the reason you've got extra cold beer is because beer tastes puke. Especially to young people who've never tasted it. So you make it extra, extra cold and it kills the taste, and you get them drinking their Guinness or the lager, and that's how it works. That's why there is extra cold. It's because young people will go, ugh, I'm not drinking that. So let's not make any bones about it that these companies purposely target young people to bring them in. And how do you do that? You sponsor GEA clubs, you sponsor soccer teams, it's in boxing. Everywhere you look, gambling is intertwined into everything. Before every football match, you can't have fun on a game unless you're betting on it. You can bet on a throw-in, you can bet on absolutely everything. So, and it's a really strong lobby, Sadie. So how do we roll back from that? Do you know what I mean? Is it about educating people? Is it trying to reduce the influence of bookmakers? Because let's not forget, there's people listening to this show that the only way you could gamble was in a little office somewhere. You couldn't see in through the windows. You'd slip in, have a gamble, you'd slip out. Now you can do it whenever you like and it's mainstream. So what needs to happen, Pete or Sadie, do you think, in the gambling industry to save our young people, to save another Lewis, for an example?
Well, Gambling with Lies are working on three fronts. We're working on the island of Britain, and we've been to Westminster with other members of Gambling with Lies and successfully met with ministers there. We've campaigned in Stormont, and it was lovely to see the joint chairs of the committee on the APG on gambling reform were DUP and Sinn Féin. And it was also unionists and Sinn Féin, yeah. And then they brought in a DUP guy who is acting as the finance manager of it all. And we've talked to Eimear Curry in the Oireachtas, and she's brought in a group called Feroiga, who weren't that well known to me, but I'm sure they're well known to your listeners. A wonderful organisation that we're currently hoping to work with. They have 600 employed members across the island of Ireland, which was stunning to me. I just thought that many fully employed youth workers. And what we'd hope to do is find some sort of an arrangement whereby we can. Sorry, Greg, we haven't got to tell you that our most powerful weapon is an education film that an employee of ours, an education manager, takes around the schools in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, that started in 2021, didn't it? Yes.
And because of my background in educational publishing, they said, well, look, we'll get an education manager, we'll do a programme, and you can manage and look after Barry. Barry Fennell is our education manager here. And he goes to GAA clubs, he goes to schools, he goes wherever he's asked and wherever we think he's going to be useful. And we want to do that across the whole island of Ireland. And through Emercurry, we've met with Feroiga, who are a wonderful organisation with many employees. Now, we're at the early stages of a conversation about this and how we help to roll it out. But I think we both have a will, both us and Feroiga, and with Emer driving us in the background, I think we're going to get something that will be really useful across us, all the counties on this island.
The problem is that Gambling with Life is a very young charity and money's a problem. So they have to constantly raise funds, yeah. This education program is free to all schools in Northern Ireland and in the UK. It's been rolled out more in Northern Ireland than the rest of the UK because it was piloted here. And they haven't really staff to roll it out.
But what astonishes me is that people like yourself, Pete and Sadie Keogh, who lost their son, and others involved in gambling, gambling with lives, that you have to fundraise for this type of stuff. Like, surely the NHS or the HSE should be saying, there's an epidemic here of gambling and the impact it's having. Let us drive these campaigns. Like, why should a group of bereaved families or others have to get the begging bowl out to tackle a serious public health issue? I would be embarrassed if I was collecting a politician's wage. I'd be embarrassed.
Well, we met with the Minister of Health, Minister of Education in Westminster, and they, very, very great platitudinous phrases they used us, but opening the pockets of government and handing us some money to do so, I'm afraid that's difficult.
Although in mainland UK, they do have centres now. Since we started campaigning, they do have centres, especially for young people who are addicted to gambling.
So there is progress, but we need to see this on our island here. And hopefully now these pilots that have been tried in Northern Ireland and with the work between the Northern Ireland agencies and the likes of Feroiga in the south, we will see this. That's your aim, isn't it? That's where you see if we can get this all Ireland reaching young people, hopefully stopping people getting into this life, saving lives. That would be...
Awareness is really the key.
And we're doing that now, aren't we, Sadie? We're doing that now.
Yes.
Yeah.
This programme's great, Greg, and we really thank Highland Radio for contacting us. And, we've got this attitude, even though we're getting on in years, the more people contact us and the more chances we get to get that message out, the better it is.
That's why we really ask people out there who have lost people to contact us or contact Gambling with Lives, because they're very good at giving people help and helping them work their way through, which we didn't have,
You had to do it yourselves, didn't you? Yeah. Okay, well, listen, Pete and Sadie, you're doing fantastic work. I'm so sorry that you lost your beautiful son. I really am. It's incredibly difficult. And as you said right at the beginning, Sadie, it changes everything forever, doesn't it?
Our lives change forever.
But you're doing this in his name and to save, hopefully, other families from going through the awful situation that you have. But you clearly have each other. You look like a powerful couple and you're not going to rest until you achieve your goals. So hopefully there's some comfort in that. And thank you so much for your time this morning. If there's anything else that you want to
add. You're very kind, Greg, and you've been asked very thoughtful questions. We appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
Have a lovely day, the two of you, and
you
best
too.
Of luck
Thank
with the
you.
Campaign. And get back in touch with us as things progress, okay? God bless you.
We will do. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Take care. Okay, now there you have a delightful couple in Pete and Sadie Keogh there. They lost their son, Lewis, due to gambling-related suicide. If that's something you want to talk about on the show, you know yourself, 086 60 25,000. Okay, we are still in a situation that hundreds of small and medium-sized creches face closure over the next year as operators warn they cannot sustain losses while handcuffed, as they describe it, into a state-funded agreement that has ignored spiralling costs. And there was a protest outside Leinster House a little earlier this week. We'll tease this out now with Elaine Dunn, Chair of the Federation of Early Childhood Providers. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, good morning, and thank you so much for having me on.
No, it's good to have you on, and I think this is really an important area. I was speaking to some people high up in business in this part of the world, and they said that access to childcare is as big an inhibitor as housing and access to housing in terms of retention and recruitment. So it's a really big issue that ripples throughout the entire economy, I think.
No, absolutely. And it's going to have a massive impact on, in particular, people remaining in the workforce, because what we're seeing at the moment nationwide is the small and medium services are now starting to close down. We now know that over 150 services have already closed, and that's inside the Federation group itself. And we don't know how many outside, but we are hearing of a lot more outside as well. So this sector is actually imploding, and nobody is listening. We have gone to the department and to Minister Gorman. We have given them solutions. We have done, this is our fourth protest. We're still going around in circles. He's not listening. Yes, he's put in 207 million, and yes, we really appreciate it. But your 207 million has not gone far enough to keep us viable and keep the sector open. And, you know, there's no way parents are going to have the choice anymore of the type of service they can go to. So parental choice has been removed. The family is going to be impacted. The economy is being impacted. And we stood outside Leinster House last Tuesday. And so it was, we were all women. It's a predominantly women-led sector. And there were women in floods of tears who have been forced to close the doors either last week or this week. It was horrendous to stand there and watch. It takes a lot for me to get emotional, and trust me, it was the most emotional day I've seen so far in this sector when you see broken women on a street begging for the support of government. You know, and then you're seeing it's the nursing home sector's been affected as well. So there's two major sectors, elderly and the young, and they're the two most vulnerable sectors. And yes, we're the ones that keep the economy going and people in their jobs, so people can go to work, know their children are coming in, they're being looked after and nurtured throughout the day. And that is going to disappear.
You know, and you talked about it primarily women in the sector. Let's face it too, it's still perhaps a majority of women that are affected in terms of career progression or work when there is no access to childcare. And you talked about a figure that's been invested in this sector, but really I think that sounds grandiose and fantastic, but really we get down to the kernel of the problem when we see how much we're spending on childcare compared to our European neighbours, and we fall far short in that regard.
Absolutely. We're at 0.3% GDP. We're miles behind. It hasn't changed. Even though there's all of this investment going in, it has not gotten any better for us. And that is the one thing they have to start looking at. Because when they come out and they say all of these millions, it sounds wonderful. And I'm saying this to everybody listening here today, 207 million sounds wonderful, but break it down. You see the larger services get a lot more because obviously they have a lot more children. And then you break it down to the small and the medium services, and it's making us unviable. And you have to listen if that's happening, because not every parent wants to put their child into a full daycare service. They want to have the choice of a part-time service. And that choice has now been pulled away. And rural Ireland has taken a massive hit at the moment. And I know there are services closing in Donegal. Absolutely, they're closing.
Yeah, I know of them. I know of them, Elaine. So, break it down in the most simplest of terms for us, Elaine, what is happening and what needs to change? Maybe that might help for all of us to understand this a little bit better, because it is a really complex area. And then when you start talking about part-time and full-time, even if you're a user, it can be really complicated on where you can miss out or not. And sometimes you have to put your child in for longer than you might even want to, etc. But in the most simple terms, Elaine, what is the problem? What needs to be done to fix it?
So the problem is that the department, first of all, they worked out our new funding models on a report that was done, a Crow report of 2017. So since 2017, the new funding model got introduced in 2023. That's a long time, a long space between 2017 and 2023. And we had a pandemic. We're in the European war. Inflation rate, everything went up. They didn't address that. That was not addressed. So then you're stuck now, and they are treating every single service as the same. And there isn't one service in this country that's the same as another. We all offer different types of services, believe it or not. I know that sounds like crazy, but we are all different. The number of children you might take in, the number of staff you have, the different outgoings can, you know, geographically, you know, so all of that has to be taken into account. We have gone to our minister, we have given them the solutions. When we took to the streets the other day, we had decided we're going to turn the book. So we've asked them to come back out. You tell us what you want from us. Because obviously, if you're closing down these services, maybe that's government policy. Maybe they want us gone and they want the mass services taken over the whole country. If they do, please tell us so that we can make business plans. for our future, because right now we can't even plan ahead for 1 month.
Yeah, it's like death by a thousand cuts. If you go, if you want us out, let us know. I get where you're coming from.
Let us know. Yeah,
all right.
Absolutely.
Elaine, this culminated in the most recent protest at Leinster House. What happens next, though? You know, like, what can you do?
We do have plans, and there's a plan of action, and we're actually discussing it with our members this week. So the next plan of action is we're going to start off with a three-day closure. And if after 3 days there's no solution, we will remain closed until something happens. We've no choice, mm-hmm. because we cannot watch and sit back and allow the government and government policy destroy this sector and bring a predominantly women-led sector down onto its knees. There is huge anxieties out there because we don't know where we're going with our businesses. Mm-hmm. Every business is supposed to have at least 3 months' wages in their banks at all times and to cover their bills as well. I can categorically tell you, that does not happen in this sector. Yeah. We are scrimping by month by month, and that's
the
fact.
Is it kind of happening is it kind of happening too that what happens is the smaller, medium-sized providers shut down, and then they get their staff, maybe to some extent, but certainly the children, where it's available, get consumed then by the bigger operators. You know, and what's happening that sounds to me like, well, why should we worry about that? Because what we're looking to do kind of is working. I'm not saying that's what they are looking to do, but I know myself of a couple that have closed down, and then the staff don't get necessarily reemployed, but the children can get brought into the bigger providers. Now, they're not necessarily going to be in the right place, and parents are going to be inconvenienced and what have you. But that's what seems to be happening.
Look, it is happening in some areas, but not everywhere, because particularly in rural Ireland, and I've had parents on to us, and they are having to drive miles, you know, to get a place for their child, or else they're coming out of the workforce because they've no choice. I know of a creche here. I'm in Dublin, and a creche down the road to me is closed down for the whole week because they've got no staff to cover. So they've just closed the whole place. And that's happening around the country. We have a staffing crisis as well. And believe it or not, most of our staff that leave the sector, we did a survey recently, and most of the staff are going to work for the Department of Education as SNAs. So it's the different sectors are taking them away from us.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to bring in more wages for staff and everything. We can only do that if the funding is coming in.
Yeah, it's crazy. It sounds to me like the HSE going in recruiting out of private nursing homes. But anyway, you wanted to make
exactly
a point.
The same. Yeah, I do. It's just a lot of us are small and medium full day care services. We're stuck at a fee freeze going back to 2016, 2017, where the larger services were clever enough to continue putting up their fees throughout the years. And we didn't. So when the pandemic hit, none of us touched our fees. So we are literally, so when the department say, you must sign the core funding and you must sign a contract for your fees to be frozen at 2021, we're actually frozen at 2016, 2017.
Right, I see.
And that's also, we're not on a level playing field.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and we brought this to the department.
Right, okay. Listen, Elaine Dunn, Chair of the Federation of Early Childhood Providers, thanks for your time this morning. I really do appreciate it. Mary Ward is owner of Slea and Ollis, who they were also down protesting at Leinster House this week. Mary, I mean, it's a difficult situation and a difficult environment to run a business. It is a business. It's a valuable and vital service and valuable in supporting the wider economy. And I wish the government would see the value in that. But Mary, how tough is it from your perspective?
Hello, Greg. I'm running our service for 23 years. Started up in September 2000. So when we started up, it was all about the children. It was all about helping the parents, get parents working, looking after their children, have a proper environment, good quality service. Now, over the years, we have worked very hard, great staff, great team in. We're all very passionate about what we do. But it's very sad to see 23 years later, we're actually in a worse position than we were all those years ago. Mm. Our main problem is funding. And just to give you an example, in 2010, the ECC preschool scheme came in for 2 years for preschool children. Now, the capitation we got then is exactly the same, and that's 13 years later, which is ridiculous given all the rising costs. That capitation should have went up, but inflation year on year hasn't changed.
Rising costs, expectation of better services and facilities, more oversight, more paperwork, more governing bodies. So everything is getting more onerous, but the pay stayed the same.
Yes. And as Leila says now, the fee freeze came in. Bear in mind, we haven't risen our fees since 2016, mm-hmm. which we tried to do to help, you know, keep it balanced for parents. Our parents here locally are all hardworking, but wages are minimum.
Yep.
So keep. And unfortunately now we've been hammered because of that. So realistically, they brought in then core funding, but it's not bridging the gap. As you said, and you're quite rightly so, all the other problems, staffing costs have risen. We are encouraging graduate-led workforce, but our graduates, that's more staffing costs. We also are very over-regulated. Huge administration burdens, a huge lack in training and professional development, mm. and also supports for children with special needs is very little to non-existent. We're just fighting all the time to get professional services in,
yeah.
speech and language, psychologists, psychiatrists, the whole lot, early intervention. It's a constant battle just to get our children.
Well, I just think it's a battle that the public need to join you in, Mary, because this affects all of us for all of the reasons that you've been outlining there. And I think, you know, I think childhood providers, early childhood providers really do need to sort of maybe see a bit more support from the public, because without yous, many of us would be in a very sticky situation. Mary, thank you so much for your time. We're going to come back to that. Maybe you might join a panel with us, Mary, where we can dig deeper into that over a longer period of time. But that's Mary Ward there, owner of Slea and Alice, and that's based in Dunloe. And fair play to Mary and all of her staff for the great work that they do.